Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, coming to you from the headquarters of the National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore.
Hello, this is Anil Lewis, and you're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and I'm here with
Melissa Riccobono. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding.
Excellent.
I'm really happy I was able to get it into gear in time for the podcast recording. So, you know, it's been a busy couple of months.
Absolutely. You know, we had USLAM convention.
Yeah.
I just finished with the NFB Bell Academy for Maryland.
Look at that. I just came back from a week in Austin with the Leadership Exchange and Arts and Disability Conference.
Wow.
Yeah,
my
fun
goodness.
Stuff.
We are super busy.
I don't know why I pay rent in my apartment. I mean, it's not like I even live there. A week in Orlando, a week in Towson, a week in Austin. I should get like a rebate or something from my apartment complex.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't think it'll happen, but that would be good.
All right. Federation's all about advocacy. Those of you who want to help, hashtag rebate my rent, start a whole movement, you know. All right. It's not about Anil. I'm sorry. This episode, we're talking about how the Federation creates opportunities for blind students to learn.
And we do that better than many other organizations out there.
I might say any other, but I don't want to be too tooting of our own horn.
We might as well be honest.
Well, there's no one out there that does it better for blind kids.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. We should take pride in that.
We should. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the Bell Academy here at the NFB for the NFB of Maryland. And
now what's the Bell Academy?
We've done an episode about it, but we may have some new listeners. So Bell is the Braille Enrichment for Literacy and Learning Academy. It is a program started out actually here in Maryland, and it was originally started for kids with low vision who weren't getting enough Braille during the school year, or maybe any Braille during the school year. And now it has expanded not only to kids with low vision, but any blind kid can be a part of it. And it's for kids who are ages 4 through 12 or so. Sometimes we have kids that are a little bit older. Sometimes we've had a three-and-a-half-year-old one time.
Oh, wow.
So we are flexible. But it was in, 32 states?
Yes, 30? Well over 32, maybe 34.
Maybe 34
and
states.
And 48 programs.
48 programs. Mm-hmm. And it is fun. And we did so many fun things. And I just have to say that every year I learn more and more. Mm-hmm. when I teach. Mm-hmm. I was teaching the older students. We have something in Maryland because we started the program quite a few years ago. We actually have some kids who
kind of aged out of the Bell age group.
Well, they're still in the Bell age group, but they're really good Braille readers.
Oh, excellent.
And so we still have something called Bell X, which is a little bit of a different program. They're still in the Bell Academy, but they do things that are a little bit more advanced.
Okay.
But this year, we got to keep them challenged. That's right. Yeah. But this year, I actually went backwards and I taught the little kids. And I must say, even though I have little kids of my own, it's been a little while since I've taught a group of 5 or 6 really little ones.
Wow.
And what I learned was I definitely forgot what little kid time was like. You know, I had these grand plans. And then we would start doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd look at my watch and I would think, my goodness gracious, we've been here for 20 minutes and we've barely gotten through.
There you go.
And then I thought, no, it's about the journey.
Yeah.
It's about planting those seeds. The theme was actually growing readers, growing leaders. So I kept just reminding myself the whole time, it's about planting seeds. And we need to slow down because so often kids in general, but blind kids especially, are rushed. I'll just do that. It's faster.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about that. I'll take care of it. It's much faster. And so we are not about that at all. We are about, no, you're going to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it might take us, you know, 20 minutes to get out of the dining room,
but it's okay
because that's how you're going to learn.
Yeah.
And we're going to have fun doing it and we're going to do it. So it was great, but man, oh man, talk about NFB tired.
Yeah,
I was exhausted, you know.
But you
again,
also learn patience and tolerance.
Oh, lots of patience, lots of tolerance. The only other thing I'll say is that I'm so proud of my son Austin and his two friends, Ty and Sophie, and Ty and Sophie's mom, Miss Alex. They created the most awesome Pokemon-themed scavenger hunt for our last day of the Bell Academy for the kids. We actually
That's
had a
awesome.
Parent seminar, and then we had the Pokemon stuff for the kids. And they were so into it.
Yeah.
They had puff paint that they homemade, and they food colored it. And so the Pokemon were all tactile, and they had sound effects, and they had clues. And they had a super good time. Ty and Sophie learned a lot, and their mom learned a lot.
And what
it was
a great
just,
way for them to learn to give back at such an early age.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was so fun, and I can't say enough about that. You know, it's one thing when our guys volunteer, our guys meaning either blind people or people mm-hmm. that have blind family members or people that are teachers of blind students. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a different level when you have somebody who knows about blindness a little bit more from the outside. I mean, obviously, we've known Ty and Sophie and their mom for years.
It's an extended community.
Right. Yeah. But they were excited to give, and it was just, they just took it up a notch, and
awesome.
it was so fun. Everybody awesome. Had a great time. So.
I think it's important to state that the Braille program birthed out of the need, like you described, for kids to get Braille. And the really interesting part about it is we know statistically that with the tremendous unemployment rate of blind individuals, 90% of those blind people that are employed are Braille readers.
That's
but
right.
yet in still the school system, only 10% of the students are being taught Braille, and we have to do something about that. So I love that. And I love the fact that what we try to tell everybody, because the professionals in some of the spaces are really, you know, in some ways kind of fight against what we're trying to do here. I don't really understand the justification behind that, but they keep on saying that we're trying to make that kid just the Braille only. But we're trying to make sure that those kids who are dual media readers, who can read print, also learn to read Braille so that they have more tools in their toolbox. And that's what I'm really happy about, the Braille Literacy Conference that we're going to be hosting later this fall.
Yeah, that will be really exciting. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll talk about that probably on a future episode.
Yeah, but we have other things to talk about in this
episode.
We
do. Sorry, I sidetracked us about
No, it's not sidetracking. It's all about educating our listeners to make sure they know what the Federation is all about. And we're hoping that, you know, if you learn more about what we do, that maybe you'll support us financially as well. Maybe we should do a whole episode on fundraising. We'll see. We'll talk to Patty about that. But this episode, we're going to talk to you about our Youth Slam. We're going to talk to you about our Tactile Art Kit. And we're going to talk to you about scholarships. So we have those things coming up. I had the privilege. See, it's setting it up, but it's not the presidential privilege.
I had the privilege of talking
to our top scholarship winner. The National Federation of the Blind gives out 30 scholarships to deserving blind students. It's a merit-based scholarship. So it's definitely academically competitive. And I got a chance to speak to Maureen Nietfeld, who's an amazing young lady in her own right. And she was the top winner in our 2017 class, which was almost as good as the 2002 class, which I was the top winner in that. And it was the best class ever that the Federation ever had in scholarships.
No, 2000. But, 2000. Best class ever.
I can't remember anyone that was in that class. Can you?
Melissa Riccobono. Actually, she was layman back then. She's the same person.
They're all the best scholarship classes.
Yes,
so let's
are.
Listen to the one from the best class ever of 2017. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and this is Anil Lewis. We're going to be talking about our NFB scholarship program. It's a program that we offer every year. We offer scholarships to 30 blind students from across the country. And it's my distinct pleasure now to be introducing our top scholarship winner for 2017, Miss Maureen Nietfeld. How are you doing, Maureen?
I'm good. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. As our listeners can hear, Maureen's joining us via telephone, and she's in the wonderful state of Colorado, one of our strongest affiliates there. How's the weather there in Colorado?
We've been getting a lot of rain, but it's pretty beautiful. It's been in the 80s every day.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, congratulations on your scholarship, winning your scholarship.
Thank you very much.
You were the big winner, $12,000. I hope that I can borrow some money from you now that you've gotten all this money, right?
No, I'm sorry. I'll be using that for school.
I understand. Believe me, I've been a student. I know how expensive it is. So $12,000 sounds like quite a bit of money, but it really goes by quickly when you're talking about paying for school tuition. It's important for me to note that the $12,000 scholarship is really sponsored by the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, which are tremendous partners with the National Federation of the Blind. But let's talk a little bit about you, talk about your scholarship experience, and then we'll educate the listeners about our scholarship program in general. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Maureen.
Okay, so I'm originally from the Philadelphia area, and I didn't actually lose my sight until a little bit later when I was 17. I have a rare genetic disorder that causes tumors in all of my organs. So I lost my sight from that, and I went to school for a little bit. Didn't really have any, you know, in college, didn't really have any skills or blindness skills. Kind of was muddling through being a blind person. And then I ended up finding out about the Colorado Center for the Blind. I went there and received my training. I work there now. I'm a home management instructor.
Oh,
and I've always really, really wanted to, you know, get my degree, and I've have a real passion for nutrition, and so I decided to go back and study human nutrition and dietetics, and that's what I'm doing. So I work full time and go to school.
Yeah, you mentioned your degree pursuit. Where are you attending school?
Metropolitan State University of Denver.
Okay, excellent. And you said you're pursuing a degree in human nutrition and dietetics.
Yes.
Okay, I have a note here that says you're specializing in the care of organ transplant.
Yeah, that's the direction I want to go in. I actually have a kidney transplant. I am a cancer survivor. I had kidney cancer, and my brother gave me his kidney. It will be 10 years next October 24th,
oh, wow.
My 10-year anniversary of my transplant.
Wow, look at you. A little walking miracle. I should have remembered that, because I think that that's some of the things that you highlight. Maureen, for our listeners to know, is also a YouTube superstar diva. She has some pieces there to talk about some of those things. You want to talk a little bit about your YouTube space?
Yeah. So my YouTube channel is called Breaking Blind, and I really just do everyday things that ordinary people do, because I'm an ordinary person, but I do it as a blind person because I'm totally blind, and I, you know, use it as just a platform to educate people about blindness and about, you know, rare disease, because my disease is considered one of the rare diseases. And also about the National Federation of the Blind. I talk a lot about the NFB on my channel and about, you know, the Colorado Center for the Blind, and I really enjoy doing it. It's been a great part of my life.
Excellent. I can see how you were chosen to win this top scholarship. You seem to be a very well-rounded individual, and peeking into some spaces that I find very interesting, the whole dietetics and that kind of thing. That's pretty interesting. I don't think I know of anyone that has that as a profession. We mentioned the $12,000, but it's important for our listeners to understand that the winners of NFB scholarships also receive others. They receive a $1,000 check from the genius futurist, Mr. Raymond Kurzweil, who is really proactive in supporting the National Federation of the Blind. Google also provides our scholarship winners with a Chromebook this year, in addition to a $1,000 check that they also receive as an award, along with some other, you know, peripheral pieces. I believe we got the lab tech thing from the Lab Quest. I'm sorry, devices from Carrie Cipolla's group. So a lot of peripheral pieces around that money, gifts, and prizes. Which we recognize has value, but I think that the true value of the NFB scholarship program, you can let me know whether you agree, is not just the money and the gifts, but it's the federation itself.
Absolutely. The federation has been an amazing and incredibly instrumental part of my life, and has really gave me back my independence and my confidence after losing my sight. And this year in particular, I almost was not going to be able to go to convention because I had brainstem surgery on May 17th that had a lot of complications, and I wasn't very well, and there was a real fear that I wasn't going to be able to attend convention, and I was able to attend convention. And the thought of not being able to go to convention for me, like, really, really drove home just how important it is for me to be with my NFB family on a regular basis, you know, monthly in chapter meetings, but also just to be around 3,000 like-minded individuals every year to kind of really just pump me up and give me that spirit that I need to get me through the year.
Yes, exactly, exactly. You know, there are hundreds of applications that come in, and we only award 30 scholarships every year. It's obvious that choosing you was a good selection for our scholarship committee, which are also blind individuals that vet these hundreds of applications to determine who becomes a finalist in our scholarship program. But it's obvious also that you have already had a tremendous exposure to the Federation. You've come to know the Federation as the true family that we have. But many people think that that's the criteria for winning the scholarship. But it's been my experience that that's not the case. Were there individuals in your class that were just coming to know the Federation for the first time?
Absolutely, there was. And one person stands out to me because she was actually Scott LaBarre's mentee, and she was at our Colorado breakfast. She joined us there, and she was very new to the Federation, and she was just so excited about everything that she was learning. They were going to be starting a chapter that she had found out about in her area in Washington State, and she was really excited to get that going and to be a part of that, and I could see it really work in her through the week, that she was just excited and passionate about the things that she was learning.
That's outstanding. And again, that reiterates why it's important that people recognize that we give money, but we give love, we give support, and that's the true value. You mentioned something in your description. You said that she was Scott LaBarre, who's our Colorado affiliate president. She was his mentee. So a lot of people don't know that that's part of the scholarship program. You want to describe the mentoring process that goes on during convention?
Yeah, so each day at convention, you are assigned a mentor that is a member of the scholarship committee, and you meet with them, you have meals with them, and you know, they're there at your disposal to learn from them and to really help kind of guide you through the convention. And for me personally, this was just my favorite part of this year's convention for me because, like you said, I've been around the Federation for a while, and this was actually my 9th convention. I go with CCB every year because I'm a staff member there, and I'm usually a mentor to my students, and I was able to receive mentorship from people that have been in the Federation for years and years and years that I've only ever heard their names through the years, and it's kind of funny, but they're like celebrities to me, kind of, you know, because I hear them speak, and one in particular, Ron Brown, like I've heard so many wonderful things about him through the years, and we've had students at the center from Indiana that just speak so highly of him, and I got to spend the day with him and his wife, and they touched me so much just hearing his story and being around them. They were so amazing to be around, and that'll stay with me forever.
That's beautiful. And I do think that it also normalizes all of us, because I think Ron Brown is a member of our National Board of Directors. He's the president of our NFB affiliate. And a lot of people think that once you ascended to that height that you're untouchable. But having those personal experiences and lets our members know, and those people who are just coming to know the Federation, that we're just normal people, just like everybody else. And I think that that's a true testament as to one of the benefits of that mentoring experience. Now, I need to let you know that, you know, I'm a member of the best scholarship class the NFB has ever had. That was the class of 2002. And I was very impressed with the other members of your class. You guys came pretty close to matching, you know, our, you know, savvy and swagger. So I was really impressed with the whole class. Interesting degree pursuits, interesting career choices. And I think that the other thing that the scholarship committee or the process does is it highlights, right, to the world that blind people are interested in a variety of different academic pursuits and career choices. Were there any that kind of stood out for you in your class?
Oh, yeah. Actually, the girl that I had mentioned earlier who was new to the NFB, her pursuit was in, like, disaster preparedness. So, and I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
And what a great field, and how important, you know, really important it is. But I thought that was just fascinating.
That would be awesome to have a blind person running FEMA, right? That would be pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, I do appreciate you spending time talking with us. I'm very pleased that you are a member of the Federation. And I think that the scholarship award is a tremendous investment in some significant potential. I'm glad that you're really entrenched in the Federation, and hope that you will continue to serve as a light for others to follow in this path that we all travel as blind people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. You just heard from Maureen Neatfeld, our 2017 scholarship, top scholarship winner of the Kenneth Jernigan Scholarship. Talking to Maureen was really enlightening. It's empowering when you talk to individuals that are dealing with significant challenges but are still able to really shine. And she's just exemplary in the way that she's living her life.
It's amazing, and I hate using that word even, and I apologize.
But sometimes it is.
I'm generally not one to use that word lightly, because it gets thrown around so often about things that really aren't amazing. But Maureen inspires me every day.
And I'm so
quite
proud that we're able to help her as an organization with the financial support for her to continue her education, because I only think that she's going to be exponentially impactful to other blind people as she continues to learn and grow herself.
I think she already has been, and I think she will be. And her speech at the national convention, mm-hmm. outstanding. If mm-hmm. you have not had a chance, if you weren't there or have not had a chance or want to revisit it, I'm assuming that if it's not up online, it will be soon. And I would assume we might even have a link to it, assuming it is up online in our show notes, and I'm sure it'll be in the Braille Monitor. But it was a great presentation of that whole panel about blind people doing sports and athletics, mm-hmm. and it was a great panel. So I certainly invite people to check that all out.
Yeah, I love the way she just challenges herself, and through that she challenges others to challenge themselves. Just a tremendous individual. And the mentoring piece, you know, that she described with the scholarship program, that's real. You know, when I went through the scholarship program, the individuals I met that really understood the philosophy in a real way and were really willing and able to have those frank conversations about the philosophy and about blindness, I think that's really what endeared me even more to the organization.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. The mentoring is such an important piece. It's not that we just make sure that people come to the convention. We really make sure they participate, that they're active participants in the convention. And we give our own brand of love. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really, again, that's I think, our secret ingredient all the way through. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's tough love, but it's love. And we're a family. And I think that mentoring really helps people realize that those aren't just words. That's not just a cliche. It's really, truly who we are as an organization. It's pretty special.
Yeah, but people don't get to the place where Maureen is without real, you know, early intervention in their educational process. And one of the things that was very mind-blowing for me is because I grew up as a sighted person and I didn't become blind until 25 years of age, I took for granted that blind kids were getting exposed to those simple things that as a sighted youth I took for granted, something as simple as doodling, sketching, just drawing little figures and stuff. And I never thought that blind students, young blind kids, don't really truly get that opportunity to do that in a non-visual fashion. And I really respect the fact that Dr. Maurer, leading the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, recognized this, and we as the Federation, collaborating with our partner, sister entity, are really doing something about it by creating the Tactile Art Kits.
And I think Chris Danielson interviewed Dr. Maurer, right?
Mm-hmm.
About the Tactile Art Kit. Maybe Mrs. Maurer as well. I think both of them are on there, which is a treat. We don't often get to hear from Mrs. Maurer. So maybe we should take a listen to that interview.
Why don't you just take us to that interview there, Melissa?
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast once again, and it is time for the news. And for the second podcast in a row now, I get to do an interview. I'm so excited. And I have two great people here to do the interview. I have the immediate past president of the National Federation of the Blind, Dr. Mark Maurer. How are you, Dr. Maurer?
I'm doing fine. How are you there, Chris?
I'm doing terrific. And, of course, the immediate past first lady of the Federation, Mrs. Pat Maurer. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. I'm so glad to be here with you.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. We want to talk about something really exciting. You know, the Federation and our partners always come up with programs that I wish had been around when I was a young boy and a young man. And this is really exciting to me. So we're going to talk about one of the organizations that works in partnership with us. The American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, and what the Action Fund is doing for blind kids. I mean, the Action Fund does a lot of things for blind kids. Maybe one of you could briefly introduce it. Maybe Dr. Maurer, if you could briefly introduce the Action Fund for the listeners who may not know.
The American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults is a nonprofit organization. I serve as its executive director. And so we're doing programs for blind children, but also for blind adults. But we concentrate a lot on children. So we have books that we give away. Every month we give a Braille book away to blind kids. And sometimes we create books that have pictures in them as well, although that's less often than true. But we're giving away this year, the National Geographic for Kids magazine, and we're giving away some Katz books. These are Oscar and Klaus books, and then we have a Christmas book that's coming. So don't forget the Christmas book. All these books come, and then we give some scholarships, and we have a lending library of materials for blind children primarily, and we also give away Braille calendars.
I was waiting for you to mention that. That's one of my favorites.
Braille calendars, about 25,000 of them a year. If you want a Braille calendar, you write to the American Action Fund or you go on our website at actionfund.org, and there you can sign yourself up for a Braille calendar, and they come free of charge, absolutely nothing required from you. We just send out the calendars, and I use them all the time, and I'm glad you use them. That means you can keep track of the holidays when we get to celebrate together, right, Chris?
That is exactly right, sir. That's really important. And we always look forward to the holidays around here. So we've got a new project, though, from the Action Fund. And this is the reason I'm so excited about it is because I never learned to draw as a blind kid. And I never was really encouraged to. And this is something that will encourage kids to do that. Right, Mrs. Maurer?
That's right. You know, I think, Chris, most of us grew up without the opportunity to learn to draw. I remember as a small child sitting in the classroom and everybody else was, you know, getting their crayons out and their pictures, and the teacher was telling what color to make certain things and how to do it. And then when she came to me, she said, "You can just draw freehand on the paper." Well, I had no idea how to draw on the paper. So somebody told me, you know how to make a house? You make a square and then you put a triangle on top of it and that's a house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I guess I could draw a house, but it didn't take very long. So, you know, one of the things that I guess it was maybe at the symposium, the art symposium that we had, people were talking about drawing as children and we were brainstorming about what we might do, and this is one of the things that came out of it, the tactile art kit, to provide these kids with something that they can play with and learn to draw at the same time.
Right. That's so important. I mean, nobody even told me that much about drawing a house, so, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So what's in the tactile art kits so that the kids can use and play with? Dr. Maurer?
Well, we have a box of materials, and this is the tactile art kit, and it has in it a whole bunch of different things. To begin with, if you're going to draw a picture, you have to have a something on which to draw it. So we have a lot of different kinds of paper. Some of it is paper, and some of it's lined paper, like it has a grid on it, and some of it is plastic paper, and then we have things to put under the paper. If you take a piece of ordinary paper and you put some substrate material underneath it, something below it, that is flexible enough so that when you draw, then the paper gets a little crease in it, then you can get lines that you can feel. So we have sandpaper. Sandpaper is a great substance to draw on because if you use a crayon on it, then it makes a feelable pattern underneath because of the grit that's underneath the paper, and also the crayon makes a sort of a feelable thing as well, and that means you can get a picture you can feel. Then we have rubbing plates. So a bunch of them are different kinds of rubbing plates. There's one that's supposed to be animal skins, and there are some others, various different kinds. And we have then a piece of plastic canvas, and we have a sensational blackboard. This is a blackboard which is flat on one side, so if you don't want to have a lot of distinguished characteristics of your paper, you put it on the flat side, or it's rubberized on the other side, you can turn it over and you can draw with a piece of ordinary copy paper on this rubberized board, and it makes lines that you can actually feel. So you take some kind of a drawing instrument and you then use it to draw. So we have a number of drawing instruments. We have an ordinary pen, a ballpoint pen. Then we have jumbo crayons, and the crayons leave the wax on the paper as well as crinkling the paper slightly. We have a serrated wheel. The wheel makes a dotted line, And we have some stainless steel chopsticks, and each one of these things makes a different shaped line. We have some things that are thinner and some that are thicker, and if you use the thick ones, you get a fat line, and if you use the thin ones, you get a skinny little line, and if you use a bunch of skinny little lines together, you get a pattern that is different than if you use fat lines next to skinny lines, and so forth. And we have all of this so that we can show people how to do it. Then we have geometric shapes, and we have a French curve that tells you what kinds of different kinds of curves you can make. And we have a glue stick, so you can take one thing and glue it on the paper if you want to. And
make a collage.
There
maybe.
You go.
Yeah.
There you go. There's an art term, Chris.
Right.
And we have a scissor to cut the things out so that you can make the collage. A bunch of different things in there. And when we get through with all of that, you got all this stuff in the box, and you don't know what to do with all this stuff in the box. You look at the stuff in the box, and you think, what is a person supposed to do with that? We have a bunch of different videos on our website that tell you something about what's in the box, and then they tell you, here's how you make this kind of a drawing, and we send you some tactile art pictures so that you can get some idea of what tactile art looks like, and then you can start making some of your own.
This sounds like so much fun. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm thinking, you know, if I'm a kid and somebody gives me a box of stuff like that and shows me that if I draw with it, that if I draw with these different things and these different substrates, that I will actually get a picture that I can feel, that just sounds like hours of fun to me. You know, it really does.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun for the kids. We've sent out about 150 boxes so far. And on the website, we have a couple surveys. There's a survey when you sign up so you can give us information about you and your child. And also, a couple months from now, we're hoping you'll fill out the second survey after you've used the kit for a while and let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you think we ought to do next, because this is a pilot project, but it's only the beginning of the kind of projects we can do from this.
Excellent. So if folks want one of these tactile art kits, if they want to get involved, what do they do?
Well, they go to actionfund.org, and there they'll see tactile art kit, and they just sign right up.
Excellent. And any final thoughts, Dr. Maurer?
Well, if they have questions about this, if you want to know about the nature of the tactile art kit, if you want to know how to use things and where to get more information and so forth, you can call Pat Maurer. Patricia Maurer here is managing the Tactile Art Kit project, and she is giving information, and you can call here at the National Center for the Blind at 410-659-9314, and it's extension 2272.
And I'm so excited about it. I'm just glad to talk to anybody and everybody that wants to talk about it.
Well, we can tell, and it's an exciting thing. I mean, this is great. This is such a great project, and I hope lots of you listeners, if you have blind children or if you are a blind child or whatever, that you'll take advantage of this, because it's a really outstanding opportunity. And this is targeted to kids 2 through 8, right?
Right. That's correct.
So, you know, this is the thing, because as with other blindness skills or any kind of skill, if you get the kids started early enough, they'll really learn it. And when they get to school, they'll know something about drawing. And they'll know what that means and how they can do it. So that's really cool.
Yeah,
so
and then they'll be able to draw more than a house, which would be great.
Yeah.
So, Chris, if you want to draw a dog,
mm-hmm.
first you draw a circle.
Ah.
And then you, down at the right-hand side, you could be the left-hand side, but anyway, pointing down a little bit and to one side, you draw a triangle, a kind of a skinny little triangle that's right up next to the circle, real close, and this means you've got a head with a muzzle, and then you can give it an eye, sort of upper top of the circle, and maybe an ear, and pretty soon you're getting a basic dog. Now, if you want to get more complex, then you might want to give the dog some hair. But you start with a circle and a little triangle, and you've got the beginning of a face of a dog. And if you draw it with this kit, you can feel it.
That is so excellent. And we're learning all kinds of things on the Nation's Blind podcast today. We're learning how to draw a house and a dog and how you can get a tactile art kit. So this is like one of the greatest news segments ever.
And if you don't know how to make a circle or a triangle, which some of these kids won't know because no one has ever showed them, then they can learn to do that too.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much, Dr. and Mrs. Maurer. It's so terrific to have you here, and this is such an exciting project, and thank you for coming on the Nation's Blind podcast to talk about it.
We're delighted to be here, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
It's so exciting to have the tactile art kit. My kids had a chance to play with it. They were excited. They love drawing. Unfortunately,
awesome.
We have paper. I mean, maybe not unfortunately.
I was wondering where you're going with this.
We have papers,
all over
our house with scribbles on them and this and that. And, you know, of course, since our kids have some vision, a lot of it is just crayon or marker that they can see, but I can't. So I'm constantly saying, what is this paper? What's this paper? Do we need to save this paper? Please, if you're going to color, color in your notebook, color in your sketchbook. But it's wonderful that kids are having the opportunity to get these art boxes. Please, if you have a child, make sure that you sign them up. It's for kids 2 to 8, as was stated in the interview. And it's a great resource. We had a lot of, as I said, little kids at our NFB Bell Academy, and we made sure that their parents got them signed up. And it will be super exciting to see what this brings. I'm hoping it will bring a whole new generation of artists that have never really had the chance before in this particular way. I mean, I certainly, as a blind kid, was encouraged to color, was encouraged to draw, did do scribbling, all those kinds of things. But like Anil was saying, mostly I was just coloring with crayon. And I mean, I could feel it, but not really.
Yeah, not like when you put that piece of sandpaper underneath it. I really played with it a little bit. It really is a noticeable difference. And I think it's something that not just the blind kids, I think sighted kids would love to play with the textures of the art as well.
And that's the whole thing. And for me, I'm sort of hoping that when my kids go back to school, I can talk to their art teacher and see if there's a way that we could either bring the tactile art box into the mainstream art room and or have me come and do something about art or tactile. I think that's a medium that doesn't always get the attention that it could.
And
I
mean,
there's
so
that. Much.
We started our tactile art and graphics specialist group, and we've really started supporting a lot of artists that do produce non-visual and tactile art at our art symposiums, et cetera. So we're doing some really good work in that space to make sure that, you know, we do a lot in STEAM and STEM, and now we're doing STEAM. Science, Technology, That's Engineering, right. Arts, and Mathematics.
That's right. Yeah. So it's cool. And it's not just about sculpture. I mean, that for me, when I would think about tactile art as a kid, I loved it when we did clay because, of course, that was completely three-dimensional and tactile. But there's just so much more out there now. You don't have to. I remember when I was a kid, it was a tracing wheel. But, of course, you had to trace backwards because it pushed the dots onto the underside of the paper.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I loved playing with that. But, you know, to really use it as a tool, it was a little bit more advanced. So it's very
cool.
And now
the Intact Sketchboard allows us to do more of that in real time because it raises the. So we're doing a lot in that space.
And you can even erase with it if you have the eraser.
That's
very, very cool.
That's true.
Very cool.
And it does complement, and try this segue, the arts work that we're doing does complement the work that we're doing in STEM. So we are really proactively doing STEAM programming, but a specific STEAM program event took place back in July, only 2 weeks after our convention, and there was our Youth Slam. President
slam
Rick Obono, we should get some of that to play, to get some Slam That stuff to play on the podcast. Maybe we will. But I think that interviewing President Rick Obono, I know we've talked about it before around Youth Slam, but this most recent one was really challenging for me because it was the first that I kind of had to step into the shoes that President Rick Obono had when he was the executive director of the Institute. So sharing with him the woes and joys of USLAM, I enjoyed it with the presidential privilege. So hopefully you guys will too. Let's take a listen to the presidential privilege. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
NFB. 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 Slam.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and I'm here with President Mark Riccobono, President of the National Federation of the Blind. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, it's a privilege.
I just wanted to throw you off.
Yeah, I live for that, though. All right. I understand. Keep me on my toes. And speaking of keeping me on my toes,
I want to see if we get complaints from the listeners, about changing it.
No, our listeners don't complain. They offer constructive criticism on how to improve the programming. That's what our listeners do. But speaking of challenging, we just finished our 2017 NFB USLAM, our Science, Technology, Engineering, Mathematics Week for 100 blind kids across the country that we brought into Towson University to teach them about STEM. I think that what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is, one, tell the listeners that this was our 10th anniversary of our first USLAM, which took place in 2007, and also say that, I was responsible in my capacity as the executive director of the Institute for running the program. However, I would not have been able to do any of this without Natalie Shaheen, master teacher in that space. And I sit back and I reflect on the fact that we had all of this expertise and all this institutional knowledge around presenting this specific program, but I still found it extremely challenging. I can only imagine that in 2007, when this was just a fresh bait concept, right, straight out of the box, with none of the institutional knowledge that we have now, none of the identified talent that we have now, when you did the first USLAM in 2007, how did you survive?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that the Federation gives us an environment where we can try new things, and to some extent there's an expectation that it's okay to fail. Not that we expect people to fail, but that, we recognize that if you're going to try some interesting things, they're not always going to work. For me, I think it's recognizing that nothing happens because of the effort of any one person. I know that sometimes the leaders of our country specifically preach the idea that one person can do everything. That's not true. Mm-hmm. That's never been true in my experience, and maybe I just don't have those talents. Everything I've seen that happens that's interesting, and certainly what happens within our organization happens because a diversity of people come together. Now, there's always an in charge, we like to say. Mm-hmm. There's always one person because that helps with the communication structure. But it's always a diversity of people. So how did you survive? Well, we can go back and think about some of the members who were here in 2007.
Mm-hmm. I had the joy of being one of the floor captains, but, from that perspective, everything looked like it was so easy.
Well, and that's the goal, right? It's like planning a wedding. No one really needs to know what was actually planned. They only know what actually happened. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece. But I think it really is significant. Certainly in 2007, we had 70 or 80 blind people who came from around the country, who volunteered a week of their time, got paid nothing, mm-hmm. and they slept in a dorm with teenagers.
Yeah. And it's important to note that in 2007, there was 200 blind kids.
Yeah, and why would you do that? Well, out of the recognition that, this organization has made a difference in their lives, and in fact, for some of them, we had mentors, a handful that were close to 70 years old. For some of them, they didn't have anywhere near the opportunity of the National Federation of the Blind USLAM, but they recognized that they could add value and that they could help support this important program that would help these young people go even further than they had the opportunity to go, to get opportunities that just weren't available mm-hmm. back in the day. So that, to me, is what makes it possible. Now, there's other things. Coffee helps. There's a Starbucks right nearby. But really, it is also the joy of working with people who don't see hard work as a job. They mm-hmm. see it as an important thing to do that's fun, that enriches their life as well as the people we're working with. And, you know, a real commitment to trying some things. And frankly, having fun is part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't work hours like we do at the U Slam, 12, 18-hour days back to back to back to back without having fun, because it would just get exhausting. You have mm-hmm. to laugh about some of the things that happen, some of the logistics that don't work out, the weird questions that people ask, whatever it is.
Yeah. It definitely is a test of flexibility.
Yeah, that, and also it's fun to watch how people react when you swarm into a place with, you know, 300 blind people.
Yeah. To your point of the volunteer commitment, when you brought the opening comments to the group this year and took the inventory of how many people had been to previous U Slams, you know, a lot of the volunteers that were there were really students in our previous U Slams, and they pursued, you know, academic degrees in those STEM fields.
Yeah, and out of the STEM fields, I think it's important that our program, you know, it used to be that blind people got pigeonholed into whatever, you know, I don't want to mention anything because, you know, many of the things that people think of stereotypical are still important jobs yeah. in society. But blind people were pigeonholed into certain types of jobs. We don't want STEM to be the next certain type of job that blind people should get. STEM is not for everybody.
Yeah.
And one of the important things is that our program has helped to clarify for people, STEM is not for me.
And they can really make that honest choice because
yeah,
they've been
really
exposed to it.
Informed choice, I yeah. think, yeah. So you take Candace Chapman as an example. She was here as a mentor, was here at the 2007 program. Well, she's a school counselor mm-hmm. doing great work, but how much more powerful is her work? She just is entering now into a high school counselor position this fall. She can give some real authentic counseling to yeah. all students. She's not only working with blind students, I mean, she's working in a mainstream high school about STEM careers because she's been there, she's done it, she's yeah. had real hands-on experience
on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And to that point, too, a lot of the success that we have in our STEM programs and our USLAM programs are not necessarily even around educating them about STEM. So much of the societal learning and the people skills and the proper interaction and the appropriate behavior, you know, that they don't get that type of real honest feedback in the mainstream, we can give them that because so many times society makes excuses for our students and we can't allow that to happen because they only do it while they're students. When they become adults, no more excuses.
Sorry. I think that's an important point that creating an environment where they can feel loved and supported but also challenged at the same time. And mm-hmm. a lot of times people have trouble putting those two elements together.
Yeah, the most powerful situation that I experienced during the U Slam wasn't even about the STEM stuff. It was one of the students coming, because we have them coming independently, walking independently from their dorms to the student union to their classrooms. And we have marshals along the way to give audio cues, you know, much like sighted people would look at signage. And one young lady, she had a significant amount of hearing loss as well. I think 62% of her hearing was lost. Called our hotline because all the students have access to reach us in case of emergency, and she let us know that she was lost. So when I got the call, I went and started looking for her, and I called her on the phone. I'm thinking I'm going to have this hysterical young lady on my hands, and she's very calm. I said, "Are you lost?" She says, "Yes." I said, "Well, do you remember passing a place that has a bell?" She says, "I think so." I said, "Do you remember walking down some steps?" She says, "Yes, I definitely remember walking down some steps." But through a series of questions, I was able to pinpoint where she was and where she went off track, and we sent one of our marshals there to get her. Again, I'm thinking that she's going to be like, "No, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, either give me a golf cart or, you know, send me home." But the marshal went and walked her through the path where she went off base, worked with her on orientation mobility, and the rest of that week it was just so empowering to see her every day, just like all the other students, walking back and forth independently and successfully from a destination. And I just fathom, I mean, I think back to the mainstream school system. One, I don't think that it would provide her the opportunity for that independent travel without some significant oversight and supervision. And two, I think once that happened, she would not have been allowed to try it again if they were even willing to let her try it the first time.
See, again, it's so important that the opportunity to fail does exist. Mm-hmm. So often, people, certainly in the vision-centered approach of society, is that, you know, unless it looks perfect, it's a problem. And of course, we know that we learn a lot from feeling comfortable problem solving out of situations, which everybody has to do once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an evolution of our program also that comes from the authentic experience of blind people. You know, at the first Youth Slam, man, we had every route locked down because we thought, oh, the worst thing that could happen is we have a kid go off track in, you know, downtown Baltimore. Which was a little bit silly, but we also knew that the reputation of the Federation was on the line. A normal thing that might happen in the course of any summer program with 200 kids, I don't know, someone falls and sprains an ankle, it would be amplified because it's the National Federation of the Blind.
Exactly.
So we were, I would admit, a little overly cautious during the first day or day and a half. And finally, our mentors started saying, you know, we got to be a little less prescriptive. This is not really who we are, what we do. And it's not that we were guiding people. It's mm-hmm. just that we really had kind of specific routes we wanted people to take. And our mentors, rightfully so, said, you know, this is not authentic to who we are, what we do, our experience as blind people, and we need to extend more of the trust and faith in these students and until mm-hmm. they, of course, you know, break it. But
exactly.
So one of the interesting things about that in 2007, we had a talent show, and talent show let out. It was late at night, and our marshals really weren't in place yet. And I was kind of more toward the front of the group that was getting back to the dorms early on. And one of the places that was really a concern for the university folks initially was crossing Charles Street, pretty mm-hmm. busy street.
Mm-hmm.
And our marshals weren't there, so I just started tapping students on the shoulders and here, stand here and say, you know, Charles Street this way.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. They were actually part of the management team, you know,
there
and
you
it
go.
Was very authentic. And that was one of, so you say, what makes it possible? The fact that we can live with these things in the moment and be true to who we are as an organization and take advantage of those opportunities and see how they work out. Having faith in blind people and the capacity of blind people just doesn't happen in this way in other places. And it's one of the things we teach and we get people to carry to the other work that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, the volunteer pieces are the most important, but I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Microsoft and AT&T and VFO for significant financial contributions, Northrop Grumman, and then Local Motors helped us with some in-kind stuff for preparation for the 3D model. So a lot of collaboration from our corporate partners, but it is truly the impact that the blind, successful blind adults have on those blind youth that really make the program so successful. We as an organization say we don't know everything about blindness, but we are the experts because we continue to learn and challenge ourselves to learn more.
And we're continuing to extend that to new areas. We just secured another 5-year National Science Foundation grant to explore new areas. This is the SABR project, so I always think of Star Wars when I talk about it. Spatial Ability and Blind Engineering Research. So we're not only going to be teaching engineering, but also exploring the often undervalued area of how we teach spatial understanding and reasoning to blind people and how they can use that in many disciplines actually to be an advantage over their sighted colleagues. And certainly we know that very good blind travelers develop a very good spatial awareness.
Mm-hmm.
How do we teach that? How are we intentional about teaching it? How do we do it early on? We think we know some of these things, but there's a lot we don't know. And just imagine how much better the next group of youth will be as we learn how to teach it in an even more intentional way. And then as we get them to do more art and tactile drawing, what interesting things will come out of that. So there's a lot of great things ahead. And of course, we're going to need volunteers for those programs that are going to want to come in and be totally out of their comfort zone. There's a lot of blind people out there who just have never drawn. They'd probably be great role models for our program. Probably a little scared about, well, what am I going to have to draw? I've never had to draw anything. But that's also another thing that we've always done in these programs is many of us have had to dive into things. I mean, I had never done a dissection before, and now I've helped to cut up hundreds of sharks, dogfish sharks across the nation.
There you go. I was going to close with the question that you've already started to answer is, why does the Federation commit so much time, energy, and resources in these STEM areas?
I think because there's two reasons. One is there's so much at risk if we don't. Mm-hmm. There's so much potential in the young people coming up that will be untapped, and we need to do much, much better than that. Again, a lot of the members of the Federation are individuals who are great people. They just didn't have the opportunities and the resources because they grew up in a time before we had NFB training centers, before we had a parents division, before we had STEM programs and demonstration projects across the country. And it's so important that we continue to invest in these programs because there's a lot of people jumping out now saying, oh, yeah, well, we can do that too. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is a lot of times their programs don't match up to that the impact and the pushing the limits in the way that we do. Now,
absolutely.
In many places they do because we're involved, but in many other places they don't. And it just doing something is not doing something valuable necessarily. So that's the first reason. And the second is it continues to push and challenge us as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
We like to say we shouldn't love anything we do so much that we just keep doing it. We continue to look at everything we do. Should we continue doing it? Should we not continue doing it? And sometimes that's, on an emotional level, a painful thing to deal with. Good example is, you know, 20-plus years ago, we created the Braille Readers Are Leaders contest.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it was the only thing really encouraging blind young people to sit down and read Braille. We know that reading is how you get to be great at reading. That's
yep.
true for all kids. And the other piece of that was that there weren't many Braille books available for kids, and so that Braille Readers Are Leaders contest helped to spark that effort. Well, fast forward 20, 30 years, that was very successful. We got many more Braille books to be available from many other places. Other efforts to encourage Braille reading and writing sprung up, and we didn't have to be the primary catalyst for that. So we moved on to some other things. So we moved on to the Bell program. It's not just a reading contest. It's actually teaching reading and writing in an intensive environment for
right.
2 weeks on end across the country. And now we have to figure out how to make that all year round. So
yeah.
that is the other reason to do this, is continuing to push the limits, to stretch our imagination, and to stand back then and observe how the rest of the field changes and adjusts because of our work. There are a lot of people now talking about STEM education for blind people, which is wonderful. But if you look at the roots, when we started this effort over a decade ago, our effort was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And just reflecting on all of that, you focus on the amount of talent and energy that it requires, but it's such a wonderful thing to be experiencing and such a wonderful thing to be part of. And it's one of those things that I always reflect back on and say, this is why I'm a proud member of the National Federation of the Blind. So I'm glad that we're doing it. I'm glad that I can be a part of it. And you too, all of our listeners, can be a part of this as well. So just reach out and get involved. Any closing comments for us, President Riccobono?
Getting involved, I think, is really key. And I want to extend my appreciation to the folks that they come and help out, and they, you know, they're not on the front lines. They're not the ones on stage getting noticed. They're not the ones with the loudest voices. You know, during the Youth Slam, I came across Denise Brown from Pennsylvania, and it hadn't really occurred to me until I was talking to her, and she said it. She said, well, you know, I've been at every Youth Slam.
Wow.
Now, Denise is a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
She's a solid mentor.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she's not necessarily the one that's assigned to be on the megaphone. How impressive is that, that consistency, that dedication? And so I think that's what keeps me motivated, are those people that are out there doing it because it's good work and because it makes a difference to them. And that's a real commitment that we just can't put a dollar amount on.
There you go. And I echo your expression of appreciation. Thank you all. Thank you, President Rick Obono. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
It's my privilege.
Well, we put in as much as we could in this particular podcast. We're hoping that the information that we shared is helpful and to some degree entertaining, but definitely educational. And we're still looking for your ideas. Our listeners out there, you dictate what we talk about along with the programming that the Federation operates. So please contact us.
Yes, please give us a call, 410-659-9314, extension 2444, or email us at podcast@nfb.org.
Yep, so you took all the old school stuff, and that's my forte. I don't know if I can do the new school stuff. You can follow us on Twitter at @NFB_voice. You can something with our Facebook page.
Like us. You got to like us.
On Facebook is National Federation of the Blind. And I think that we have some other social media stuff out there, but those are the two that I really know about.
I think we have Instagram. Oh, we have our Nation's Blind YouTube channel. There's all sorts of ways to get in touch with us.
Thank you for bailing me out. But we do want to hear from you, and we're hoping that this information is enjoyable for you as it is for us to bring it to you.
And we hope that you have a good start to your school year if you are a student going back to school. I know school is kind of a whispered word in our house at this point. But if you are one of those students who are going back to school, we hope that you have a great year. And we hope that you will continue to be connected with us and help us with the opportunities that we have for blind students to learn.
Yeah. And remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.
Thank you for listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or feedback, send an email to podcast@nfb.org or leave us a voicemail at 410-659-9314, extension 2444. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @NFB_voice. Check out the Nation's Blind channel on YouTube. And visit us on the web at nfb.org. Until next time, remember, you can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.